Welcome to the Marketing Society podcast. I'm your host, Mike Pigger, editor at the Society. And for today's pod, we have another episode in our series, Startup for 10, a series of 10-minute talks from clever people in our network about things of interest to marketers. For today's talk, we have the co-founder of PLH Research and co-author of three books on marketing to women, Jane Cunningham, to talk about some of the themes from her latest book, Brandsplaining. Over to you, Jane.
Thanks, Michael. We made the decision to write our third book, Brandsplaining, because in recent years, it had on just one too many occasions been explained to us that marketing to female audiences was a problem that had already been solved. After all, we had Dove's breaking boundaries in beauty marketing. We had always challenging stereotypes around being a girl. ASA legislation had even been introduced to militate against gender stereotyping. And this sort of flagship activity gave the industry something to point to, something to suggest that while, yes, there may still be problems, progress was happening and everything was moving in the right sort of direction. But our feeling was that these high-profile examples, while many of them brilliant, more often than not provide cover for complacency about the more problematic aspects of marketing to women that still doggedly persist. Marketing, from what we hear in our research, still has a long way to go before it demonstrates a deep and detailed understanding of the lives women actually live. In the day-to-day business of conducting our research, we were hearing more outspokenness about the limited and largely domestic roles women are ascribed in advertising. The harmful grip that brands on social media with their perfectionist presentations of women seem to be getting on younger women and girls. The seemingly ceaseless focus on appearance in marketing to women, whether body shaming or body positivity, it's still so much of the time about the way women look, not what women are or what women do. Based on insight gathered over 15 years researching women, we were hearing that the industry still preferred to explain to women how they should be and how they should act, rather than figure out how women are and what it is that they want. In the last quarter century, we've seen business tackle gender inequality with corporate feminism. You know the kind of thing, female networks, mentoring, assertiveness training. In marketing, that got a public face in the form of the ghastly term femvertising, the you go girl, dream it, be it stuff that became popular as the fourth wave of feminism swelled. But both of these efforts, intended to create a more equitable context for women, are flawed. Flawed because they're asking women to fix the problems of systems and structures that work against them by asking them to change themselves in order to fit more neatly and therefore more successfully within those systems and structures. Business tells women to lean in. Brands tell women to dream it, be it, to stop apologizing and to love their bodies, as if women not being motivated enough or giving in to the pressures that culture creates to be ever thinner, firmer, sexier, or that women having the good manners to say sorry is the actual problem. This fragile and frankly rather convenient answer, blame it on the women and get them to change, has failed to achieve the equality it promised, revealed most starkly over the course of the pandemic. 70% of jobs lost in the pandemic will be jobs that women do. The number of women working in agencies has dropped by 13% compared with 8% for men. The gender pay gap in creative agencies is still a staggering 28%. And Zoe Scarman's recent blog post, Mad Men and Furious Women, suggests that one of the most basic tenets of equality, to feel safe from sexual harassment in the workplace, is not yet secure in advertising agencies. So given that telling women to change has not provided the equality the industry states it supports, and given the complacency we were feeling the industry was indulging itself on the back of some high-profile activity, we decided to set about defining a more sustainable path. The first step on that path is to confront and remove unhelpful beliefs about women that may be, usually unconsciously, hobbling progressive thinking. Deep within our culture, there is an idea about women that their lives are shaped as a bell curve. This shape of the bell curve identifies what makes women important and worthwhile through a male lens. It culminates from many hundred years of female secondary status to male power, male wealth, and male dominance in discourse. Women are successful when they look and behave in a way that's appealing to men, sometimes called the good girl phenomenon. Women are believed to be at their zenith, reach their highest achievement when they get married and have children, when they have literally secured male approval and patronage. Everything leading to this achievement is a preparation to securing it. So little girls play with dolls and learn to be soft, affectionate, and kind. Usually by the age of 8, these ideas of femininity set in preparation for becoming caring, affectionate, and kind partners and mothers. Younger women are told to change their appearance to please men, usually meaning be thinner, be blonder, and more often than not, be whiter. Everything afterwards, when children grow up and leave, is a perceived decline because women after 50 at that point have outlived their usefulness. We see these idealizations hardened, crystallized, and brought powerfully to life in marketing. Toy marketing that perpetuates the good girl ideal, a predominant focus on female appearance in marketing that targets young women, the prevalence of perfect mom in baby marketing, always happy in her maternal role, happy to be rewarded with smiles alone. And then, of course, the absence of women over 50 in marketing at all. Only 1 in 10 ads featuring women show a woman over 50. The underlying assumption here is that female lives are meaningful only really in relation to men, when they're in the mating game, when they're reproducing, thereafter they're redundant. The bell curve is not, however, how women see their own lives. When we asked women in our research what it is they aspire to, their answers show an alternative, almost opposite picture. We asked 14,000 women across 4 continents about their aspirations. Bottom of the list is finding a mate to rely on so they can give up work. And second to top of the list is financial independence. Towards the bottom of their list is to be admired for how they look, and top is to feel comfortable in their own skin. Women find the experience of having children challenging, wonderful, but also challenging. And when advertising suggests it's an easy breezy lifestyle choice, this can make them feel that they're coming up short, not relishing all the ways and all the time they ought, and therefore often feeling like failures. In the later stages of life, women experience age as a period of enlightenment and liberation, free at last from putting themselves second. If anything, women looking back in their lives would draw the curve as an upward trajectory, getting ever better as time and they go on. Marketing that investigates and empathizes with the truth of female aspiration, challenges, and positivity will connect more powerfully than those with the bell curve and the good girl embedded in their frameworks. Women-made brands, businesses conceived of and run by women, have understood this and are biting great chunks out of markets with meaningful D2C relationships. Third Love is one of the brands that has taken on the male gaze lingerie brands like Victoria's Secret, with a focus on the wearer, not the viewer. Where Victoria's Secret told women that the only body worth having was punishingly small, and that lingerie is about being an angel, code word for good girl, that it's about winning the man. Remember, the last set of the VC show was always the best angel wearing the wedding lingerie. Third Love replaced the scratchy soft porn aesthetic with underwear that's about comfort for the female wearer, available in soft materials and helpful half cup sizes. Freedom Mom tells the truth about motherhood. More than that, Freedom Mom makes products that demonstrate you actually understand in granular detail what a nipple feels like in the initial stages of breastfeeding or what it takes to soothe the postpartum vagina. It doesn't pretend, because that's what's easier for people to believe, like traditional baby care brands do, that it's all blissful, it's all smooth running, and anything less is an aberration or a sign that you're doing the job badly. Starling Bank overturns the power relations between brand and customer, putting the power and the information they need into women's hands, not keeping it behind a wall of jargon and intimidating language, which is what banking often feels like. Girlfriend Collective features all kinds of women without making a big bloody deal about it, because it's just what women look like. Girlfriend Collective focuses in on their supply chain too, and they check themselves against how they treat women across the whole of their operation, because a reckoning is coming where brands that treat women badly in order to provide women with products and services are going to get called out. We approach the coming years with optimism, because there's a genuine desire in the industry to contribute positively in all kinds of ways to a better world. And gender equality is amongst those ways. Women-made brands are setting an example of what can happen when we leave behind old and outmoded ideas about women, and that's incredibly exciting. So the will is there, increasingly intelligence around the female audience is improving, and with open minds and a rigorously questioning approach about your own long-standing assumptions about women, there's every reason to be hopeful that a new, more equitable era of marketing to women can emerge.
Great stuff. Thank you very much, Jane. That was highly interesting. And I urge everybody to go out and buy Jane's book, latest book, and in fact, all the old books as well. For now, I just want to say, Jane, thank you so much for coming on the Marketing Society podcast.
Thank you.